And with that, we're going to get into today's discussion. Again, we have with us Brian Domke, the Republican, and Steve Johnson, the Democrat, who are vying for the Bonner County Commission District 1 seat. That's a seat currently held by Steve Bradshaw, who did not run for re-election. And it's District 1 encompasses the area of Sagal, the southern part of the county. But it's important for people to know that unlike, say, the school district election, where you can only vote within your district, all county residents vote for all district candidates.
Correct.
Yep. So, well, Brian, you come first alphabetically. So let's start out with you. I want to give you each a couple minutes to just make an introduction to the voters. Tell a bit about your background, how long you've lived here, and any education or pertinent professional experience, and wind into this 2 minutes why you're running.
Thank you, Chris, and good morning, Bonner County. I am Brian Domke, and I moved my family here. Actually, three generations of the Domke family all moved here a little over 10 years ago and established our small farm and homestead. And we moved here because we love the rugged landscape, and most importantly, the first time we visited, we were captured by the kindness, the thoughtfulness, the overall culture of the community. And that's really what drew us most of all. And so, having moved here, my background is that I grew up as a farmhand in central New York. It's the Finger Lakes region, lots of dairy country and rolling hills. And I went to Cornell University, where I gained my bachelor's degree in landscape architecture, began working for an architecture and engineering firm there, rolled from being a designer into project management and regional management, and did a lot of work with K-12 public schools, colleges and universities, post offices, projects that require public input, that spend taxpayer dollars and therefore need to be very thoughtful and considerate of how funding is being used and that the voice of the taxpayer is being considered in all of those decisions. Ultimately, after moving here, I spent some time working as a manager in the engineering department of one of the local aircraft companies, and have also established my own small business as a landscape architect, helping folks who want to establish their own family farm or create a new home in the area and do it in a thoughtful way that works with our county codes and considers impacts to the landscape and the land around it. So I'm running for office because I have been concerned about many issues, including land use and our ability to be sustainable with our growth into the future. I've been concerned about the way we see the public being treated and the way our elected officials treat one another. I would really like to turn that around and build decorum and thoughtfulness and be able to move into the future in a way where we're working together and respecting one another and challenging one another's ideas to come up with the best possible decisions.
Brian Domke, thank you for that. Steve Johnson, tell us a bit about yourself, your qualifications, and why you're running.
Well, I'm Steve Johnson. Thank you for having us here on the air. I grew up here on the family farm out in Sagal with my three brothers, and went to Southside Elementary School in Kokalala. At that time, it went through the eighth grade, and graduated from Sandpoint High School, and went on to the University of Idaho in Moscow, getting my bachelor's and master's degree, one in education and the other one in administration. Marguerite and I raised our four children here on the family farm, and it's just been a joy and a wonderful place to grow up, and then a wonderful place to raise our children. And two of our children live close by, and three of our grandchildren. And that's been a real fun thing also. I've been real concerned with the interaction that's amongst the commissioners and the interaction with the public. I feel like commissioners are servants of the public, and in some cases it doesn't seem that's the attitude that's been displayed. My background in administration is some years ago in the late 80s, we needed public school buildings. And so at that time, I was an elementary principal in the district, and we worked on a long-range plan and how to rebuild some of the schools that were in pretty desperate physical needs. And some of the problems were that one option was to have a bond that would require a bond that would require paying interest on the bond to build there was so much building that needed done. But instead, we agreed to do a serial levy, and so we didn't pay any interest, and we were able to build one school at a time, starting at the school that I was principal at the time of Sagal Elementary. Anyway, it was a really long-term project, and I think we did a good job. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Well, we're going to rotate on who goes first. So this first one is to you, Steve Johnson. And I will say around 2 minutes for an answer, and I'll kind of wave at you. The listeners won't hear that when you're getting close to time. As well, if you want to make a rebuttal to something your opponent says, we'll allow a minute for rebuttal. So you have that opportunity as well. And first question to both of you, but first to you, Steve Johnson. So what do you consider the biggest issues in the commission race that you think voters ought to be weighing?
I think the biggest issue is actually the affordability of being able to live here and have our children and grandchildren being able to live here also. And a big part of that is, in my opinion, the housing situation. So I do believe in the commissioner's primary responsibility is paying the bills, building the roads and the bridges, making sure that things run day to day on a smooth basis. But also there needs to be more, in my opinion, a visionary approach where we look to the long term and things that affect our economy. If we don't have housing for workers, we go to a restaurant perhaps, and there's nobody there to cook or nobody there to serve the meal. If we go to a grocery store, there's so many jobs that are not able to, the pay for the jobs are just not able to realistically pencil out to live here with rents that approach $1,500, $2,000 a month plus. And so I think the county commissioners have a responsibility to make sure that we're looking at our local economy on just about every decision we make to make sure that we can help people stay here, not just for the goodness of it, but for the practicality of we need workers and workers need stable housing.
Okay, thank you. Brian Domke, same question to you. What do you consider the biggest issues in the commission race you think folks should be looking at?
I think our three primary issues right now in the commission race and our county as a whole are the responsibility of the board as it interacts with itself and the public, really making sure that we are respecting the voice of the public to be heard and to be seriously considered. I think our land use issues are another top issue and priority for the county. We're working toward an improved comprehensive plan. We have more work to do, and then that has to shake out into our land use regulations within our county code. And then underlying all of that is fiscal responsibility. Our county budget is being outpaced by our growth, which means it's difficult to pay for the infrastructure that we need to improve and to expand in order to address that growth. Part of our budgeting process, I believe, is in need of being much more thorough and well thought out. And so I would really like to see us focus on getting into more of a private business approach to our budget development, where we are going through and looking at state statute to justify all of our line items and our requests for expenditures, and then also doing regular reporting, key performance indications type of reporting, to understand whether or not we're actually meeting our targets or if we need to course correct along the way so that we're being as responsible as possible with our taxpayer dollars.
Okay. Thank you for that, Brian Domke. So, Brian, you go first on this first question, and I don't know if it'll take 2 minutes, but what kind of grade would you give the County Commission for its past couple of years of work?
That's going to be a very low one for me. The fact that we've had citizens who have been arrested, that we have lawsuits pending from those arrests and actions.
Happening right there at the commission meetings.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Happening by former county commissioners at these commission meetings, mm-hmm. Which is now invited lawsuits that the county is going to have to bear the burden of. Land use decisions that are being legally challenged. There's so many issues right now that our county cannot afford to have to pay for that are distracting us from the actual emergency services and infrastructure that we need to be focused on. And I think we're agreeing on the need for decorum and respect and thoughtful approaches. And if we can get back to doing that type of business, then we can avoid these unnecessary lawsuits and costs that come from them.
Okay, thank you. And Steve Johnson, same question to you. What kind of grade overall would you give the County Commission for its last couple of years?
Well, I've given a lot of grades, and it's a lot's involved in a grade, but overall, extreme disappointment, actually some embarrassment. At one of the commissioner meetings, one commissioner just yells, we can't say that word, just yells BS. Actually, across the table at another commissioner. Just inexcusable and not just embarrassing, but very unproductive. I mean, in my opinion, county commissioners have a standard of behavior and productivity that is significant. And acting like it's a junior high school screaming match or whatever is just not appropriate at all. One recent thing that came up at the last county commissioner meeting just yesterday morning is the whole Camp Bay thing, talking about land use, et cetera. That seems to be relatively settled, I guess, although there's this easement trail thing that's being looked at again. But the idea that we're going to give up access to very popular and beautiful areas is just real disturbing to me. So one of my first actions would be legally looking over all the different areas of our county that lead to access to beautiful spots and seeing if we need to tighten up those legal requirements. If somebody buys a piece of land, can they, in effect, limit the access of the public to that land? When I go to visit my daughter, who happens to live in the Bay Area, the idea that you can own the beachfront or own the waterfront and restrict other people from the public that historically has been available to them, that's very concerning to me.
Okay, thank you. Actually, that's kind of one of the questions on my list that we'll swing back to in just a second, but here's a question that we were all at the candidates forum last night, and it was a good exchange of positions there. We had more questions submitted from the audience than we could get to. So here's a question that came in for the county commissioners. I thought it would be a good one to go ahead and ask here. And I believe you start first on this one, okay. Steve. Every candidate has said they want to finish the comprehensive plan with public input. What specifically do you want to see kept in the current comprehensive plan, eliminated from the comprehensive plan, and changed or added to the comprehensive plan?
Well, the section that I am very adamant about and very supportive of is the private property rights. And I believe it's incorporated very well. I want to make sure that stays in and that we have a lot of public input. And again, relating to Camp Bay and some other possible similar situations, legal counsel, because it's one thing to write regulations and narrative on the comprehensive plan, it's another thing to have that thoroughly reviewed by, in my opinion, legal counsel, so we don't have another, what seems to me, a gross injustice like Camp Bay.
Okay. Same question to you, Brian Domke. Every candidate said they want to finish the comprehensive plan with public input. What do you think we should be keeping in the comprehensive plan, eliminating from it, or changing or adding?
Well, as a former chairman of the Planning and Zoning Subarea Committee for Priest River Old Town, I would really like to see, as part of public input, the current Planning Commission invite, as an advisory role, the members of those former subarea committees to really dig into the recommendations that they had offered, not just assume that reviewing what was put in writing at face level is necessarily all of the value that we could get out of that information. I'd also love to see sort of a moving tour where, because we acknowledged as a county that we have at least five subareas of the county that should be specifically considered because of their unique geographic features, natural resources, other aspects. I'd like to see that where, instead of just asking everyone to come to the administrative building, maybe they go out to these different communities, meet in community halls and local gathering places, and really try to extract more public input before we finalize this plan. I'm going to actually disagree with Mr. Johnson. Right now, when you look at our comprehensive plan, the property rights aspect of it essentially talks about the state's right to take property away using eminent domain. We already know that the state has those rights that are written into the state constitution, the legislature. What I think we should have in the comprehensive plan is something that really talks about the right that we have to not be harmed by our neighbors, and defines what harm is, how harm is remedied, how can we can prevent it. And there are areas in our comprehensive plan that are gaping holes right now, such as harm that could be caused by, say, a brand new cell tower that might be built too close to residential areas, or the fact that I believe right now our conditional use permit process has loopholes in it, where our county is actually issuing permits for people to have essentially commercial uses in the middle of rural residential areas. So those are things that need to be addressed. We need to tighten that up, and we need to make sure that we're being thoughtful so that we're respecting the fact that everyone has equal property rights, not just the applicant. So we need to make sure that when somebody wants to do something, it's not harming their neighbors.
I would just add,
okay,
if I could.
I've got a minute here for rebuttal, if you like.
Well, just the idea that when there's conditional use permits, or you're looking at some exemptions to land use, the idea that we can approve, that seems to have happened in the past couple of years, we can approve a development without a good assurance and a good infrastructure plan that can handle that development. So I think that's another huge component to any kind of land use planning in the future.
Okay, well, I'm going to cite a couple of issues that came up in the last year that the county commissioners dealt with, and ask you how you would have voted on these things. And the first one actually is Camp Bay. It is, again, before the commissioners, because they're discussing an easement for the trail that will lead to Camp Bay. But the trail was provided by the developers in the place of the road easement that was there for all county citizens to access the little chunk of the lake there at Camp Bay. It had been public access for a century or more. And the deal's done now. It's been through the courts. I don't think there's going to be changing that. But where would you have stood on relinquishing or vacating the road to the developers as the county commissioners did? They didn't have to do that. Brian Dumpke, you wanted to go first with that one.
I absolutely would have been in opposition. It's clear to me, on the basis of all facts, that it was not in the public's best interest to abandon that county road, and that what the public's going to be left with is far inferior to the access that it had previously. This is one of those instances where I think we're seeing very few people are benefiting at the loss of the community as a whole, and that's inappropriate. Our county commission and board should never be making decisions that are benefiting the few at the cost of the community at large.
Okay, thank you.
I would totally agree with that. The problem is we are a society that's ruled by laws. So evidently there was some interpretation by the courts that the county commissioners could not deny this happening. So in the regulations going forward, it seems to me that needs to be a number one priority, that kind of thing cannot happen again, because I agree that there's just no excuse for losing public access to some of our wonderful resources here.
I'm not sure if the case determined that they had to give it. I think they said they have the right, the county had the power to, the commissioners had the power to do it. And so they proceeded with that. Yeah.
Yeah. If I could help clarify, I think the issue there is that the board deliberated and came to the conclusion that they believed it was in the public's interest. And so the judge found that there was an argument made that it was in the public's interest for certain stated reasons. Unfortunately, the way the law works, you don't have to put out a scale and prove that it was better or worse for the public's interest. You simply have to state that there was a reason. For one of the reasons they gave that I think is a very weak argument and never should have won the day, but unfortunately it did, was that now there would be less county road to have to maintain, so we were going to save the county money. And I don't think any resident in the county would have made that trade for a little less highway maintenance to give up that kind of public access to the waterfront. So it's understanding the nuance of the law and when and where it needs to be applied is critical, and so we do need to be clear on these issues.
I agree with that.
Okay. Okay, well, that's one example of a decision that was taken here by the county commissioners in the last year. Another one is a bike park in Sagal that was approved. It was for an 170-acre, basically a couple different, I think, adjoining parcels, but it added up to 170 acres that a private entity wants to put a bike park on. It's going to have a bunch of mountain bike trails. There'll be 10 on-site camping sites, and it's going to be opening. And it was contested by neighbors who feared that it was going to bring a lot of commotion to the neighborhood, basically. But this is a kind of a classic case of private property rights versus, you know, the rights of those neighbors who lived in there to live in the fashion that they have been. And the conditional use permit was approved for that, so that one's going to go forward as well. But how would you have fallen on that one? And Steve Johnson, that's question to you first.
Yeah, I live out in that area. I was elementary principal at Sagal for a number of years when we built a new school, and I know that area pretty well. And I would not have voted for that conditional use permit. I do agree that we need some really good physical outdoor activities for young people, who probably would be most of the bike jumper rider people. And so I hope we can find a place for them that is consistent with the area. I don't believe the current application should have been approved.
Okay.
And I would not have voted for it.
Same question to you, Brian Domke.
I'm going to agree, and I'm going to give a slightly different reason, however. So it's all about interpreting the law accurately and the equal application of the law. And so in this case, we have rural residential zone property. We have an application that essentially, depending on which definition you want to use, was either a commercial use or a recreational use. Our county code currently has land use designations for both of those types of uses. And they should have been forced when they put in their application for conditional use, which is essentially saying your county code hasn't considered this type of a use. It's unique, and therefore we're asking for your special consideration. In this case, what should have happened was to say, I'm sorry, this is not appropriate for a conditional use permit application. What you're actually asking to do is rezone the property for commercial or recreation. You may apply for that and go through that more rigorous process to see whether or not you can actually get approval. I believe it would have failed a rigorous review if they had requested to rezone or change the zone of that rural residential parcel into either commercial or recreation. And so I believe that would have been the proper process, the proper application of the law. Instead, what happened, I believe, was a travesty.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's turn to a different question here. And this is one that's been in the news quite a bit, or was over the course of the past couple of years. The relations between the commissioners have been pretty rocky, the existing commissioners.
Rocky, yes.
Many of the weekly commission meetings devolved into arguments, and one of you guys mentioned that it led to a couple of local residents actually being trespassed from county property. What steps will you take to make the climate of those commissioner meetings more civil and productive? And Brian, that's to you first.
First and foremost, I think we need to respect everyone in the room, fellow commissioners, fellow electeds, especially the community. One of the ways we show people that we respect them is we take the time to listen, we invite their comments, and even when we disagree, we do so respectfully. The other thing that I believe is important is we had this ongoing history of commissioners who are representatives of the people of our county putting forward motions and simply never getting a second, so the idea can't be fully heard and debated. I'm committed that if I was in office that I would second the motion of each of my fellow commissioners simply so that we could debate the issue. We could fully hear, understand, and consider. We can always vote no. But if we don't hear the idea, we don't know if it's a good one. And so I'm committed to promoting conversations, having discussion, and entering into rigorous debate when needed so that we can come up with the best possible ideas and solutions for our county. But we should never be afraid to have our ideas challenged.
Steve Johnson, same question to you.
I think one of the key, well, I would agree with everything that Brian just said. I would also add the chairperson bears quite a bit of responsibility in maintaining an orderly and respectful environment. And I've been impressed since Ms. Williams has been chair. She's been able to redirect and focus the question. This is the issue that we're talking about. You have other issues on comments on other issues. That's fine. We will take public comment during this meeting, but right now we're focused on that. That can be done in a firm and yet respectful way. And my hat's off to Ms. Williams for the last few meetings where she's been chairperson.
Since she was.
Yeah, agreed. The tone is completely different now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hopefully we are past that, you know, super contentious period of time there, regardless of who gets in there.
Right.
I'm going to bring up one kind of complicated situation that was a source of conflict, and that's the fairgrounds. And there's been several things that have gone on there. For one, a proposed RV park at the fairgrounds that the county had actually received a $473,000 grant from the state to build. Stoked a lot of conflict between specifically the sheriff, who wants to see property at the fairgrounds held for potential future justice building, and the county commissioners. That grant was lost, so I think that the RV park expansion there has been taken off the drawing board for the moment. And then also the sheriff last year published a report indicating that a lot of money, somewhere between $40,000 and $247,000 of fairgrounds funds were misappropriated, specifically through fraud by a fair director. And the county fair board issued a release last fall claiming the commissioners and the county clerk were to blame. The commissioners voted to hire an outside audit. I'm not sure the status of that at this point. But where do you guys stand on the fairgrounds conflict that boiled up over the course of the past year, and what steps might you take to move past that? I think Steve Johnson, you're first on this one.
I was very concerned because growing up here, wonderful experiences with 4-H and with the fair overall, with our kids and then our grandkids. The fair is just a huge part of rural life, and I want to make sure that it is preserved and supported. At the same time, taxpayer money cannot just be in a category of unaccounted for. There's no excuse for that. So I went to the, I've had conversations with the treasurer, Clarissa, for the county, and she said that they have their own accounting group, and that she has been able to give them pointers on how to better keep track of money and avoid fraud or avoid inappropriate use of the money. So that's a huge part. So number one, want to support the Fair Board, do whatever we can to make sure that it continues. At the same time, make sure that any taxpayer money going to the Fair Board is accounted for and valuable.
Hmm. Same question to you, Brian Domke. Fairgrounds, how would you approach the fairgrounds and the relations between the commissioners and the Fair Board?
First, I'd like to begin by trying to remove the adversarial atmosphere. I would suggest that the Board of County Commissioners invite the Fair Board to just have a roundtable discussion workshop to better understand what the plan is that the Fair Board has, how they would like to grow and provide the wonderful experience of the county fair and of the other activities for our community into the future, and then figure out how they can work together to support one another. It's a very unique relationship. For those who don't know, the state statute actually gives the Fair Board unique and separate powers from the Board of County Commissioners, even though their members of the board are appointed by the Board of County Commissioners, and it's county property. So there's a lot of layers of overlap that have to come together for everything to work well, because there are complexities there. And so there's going to be some nuance to figuring that out. But I think everything starts with relationship and open communication. So let's build these relationships, these conversations. Let's understand what the Fair Board's intent is going forward to support the community. And then let's figure out how our county government can assist them in doing that job appropriately, as was mentioned, because I agree, we need fiscal accountability and responsibility. We need transparency of where funds are going within that organization. And we need to be sure that we're not going to jeopardize its ability to continue into the future.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, follow-up question on that. I'll go to you first, Brian. So the kind of the third party here is the sheriff. He wants to make sure that part of the property is maintained for potential future justice building. And that led to the downfall of this proposed RV park and the loss of a $473,000 state funding to build that, which I believe the commissioners were seeing as a way to bring in revenue to help offset the costs of for maintaining the fairgrounds. Where would you have stood on just the RV park itself?
So I actually offered public comment on multiple occasions when this came up, and I was in attendance of those county commissioner meetings. And my public comment then is no different than my opinion now. And that is, the board never presented a business plan that was viable and justifiable to build the RV park. Numerous community members raised questions about, first of all, should the county be expanding its role, if you would, in competing with local businesses for RV park rental services? Government probably shouldn't be in the business of competition with the private sector in our community. So that's one consideration. Another consideration was utilization of the existing RV spaces. What percent utilization, how much could we expect the actual revenue to be? The projections that were presented publicly were essentially looking at 100% use, 365 days a year, and that's not realistic from anyone's calculations. And so the numbers that were presented didn't deal with facts. So we didn't have a clear plan. I never will support moving forward and investing county taxpayer dollars and something that's not well thought out and can be justified with facts. So that's why I was opposed to the idea of the RV park. I will say, however, that everyone assumed that you were either for the park or you were for the Justice Center. And my opinion is we are probably going to need to replace the current courthouse facility because of its age and other issues that it's having structurally. And we may need more space at the jail and other areas because of our growth. But again, we need to have a very well thought out comprehensive plan for how that growth, how that expansion would happen. And we need to evaluate, is that in fact the best location? Is that the best use of taxpayer dollars for that piece of county property? And we need to do a thorough investigation. And if our conclusion is that that's the best business plan for the county, then I'll be on board. But first I need to see those arguments on paper and confirm that in fact we can make that manageable from a cost perspective and a long range plan perspective.
Thank you, Bram Domke. Steve Johnson, same question to you. Where would you have stood on the proposed RV park and you know, the fact that the county,
well,
county led a $473,000 grant?
I've got kind of a human personal response as well as a practical one. When our kids were in 4-H and had pigs, for example, you go there and the kids need to work with the pigs and prepare the pigs for show, and you need to stay there with your 10, 11, 12-year-old. You need to stay there at the fairgrounds to support them. And you need some place to stay. So on the one hand, from that personal experience over a number of years, I can see it would really be nice for people to have a decent RV place there. On the other hand, I agree that there didn't appear to be an overall visionary plan on how that RV park would pay for itself. So I can see both sides. Even though I sometimes have such good memories of 4-H that I kind of want to have a better RV park there, it looked to me also that there was not sufficient planning on either the sheriff's part or the Justice Department part or the fairgrounds part. So I think that's probably I would have not been able to agree to either of the choices.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Well, one thing that touches just about every resident of our county are the county roads, and the county is responsible for the road maintenance I don't know how many miles of roads, but how do you think the county's doing with the roads? And we'll start with you, Steve. And, you know, would you be advocating for any changes there?
So I was able to speak at length with Jason, head of Road and Bridge, and so proud of him, in my opinion, and his wise use of taxpayer dollars. And our road, I live out south of town on a county dirt and gravel road. Our road is so much better than we had growing up. We used to have what was called mud vacation in April because the county roads were so poor. They were not drained, they didn't have culverts, ditches, base, etc. And so there was no school for like 2-3 weeks at a time. So hats off to Jason and that whole road and bridge department, and the idea that there's money out there for grants, for working with both the state and federal governments to make sure that we are making ourselves available of all dollars that can help improve the services for Bonner County. That's a priority for me. Mm-hmm. And sure, we've got one interesting thing that Jason told me was that bridges, the difference between federal money for bridges and other money is federal bridges, for the most part, have to be concrete. Well, so that's one of the strings that's attached. But why concrete? Well, because it's more durable and it's resistant to just lots of things that steel might not be. So even though it's more expensive and there are some strings attached, that is no way an excuse to deny potentially available resources to improve our roads and bridges.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Brian Domke, same question to you. How do you think the county's doing with roads?
Yeah, I think our county road and bridge department is working very hard for the citizens. I always see their efforts 12 months of the year going on throughout our county as I travel. And, you know, one of the things that is a harsh reality that we have to deal with, is our growth is outpacing our budget. And so I do ask that our citizens, while folks get frustrated because it's not possible for, say, in the spring, the road grader to show up and get rid of those potholes on every one of our country roads first, please be patient. Please understand that there is a limited budget the county's working with, which means there's a limited number of graders and operators, and just the ability to have the resources to keep up. I believe that right now our county has, at last count, over 700 miles of road that it maintains. And, you know, that is also something that we've experienced in the last year. For those who didn't firsthand have to deal with it, the unexpected emergency replacement of the culvert on Dufort Road when it washed out. Thank God no one was hurt when that happened. But Jason's department jumped on that, and they got that done in a very timely manner. They did a great job of communicating with constant updates, the progress and the schedule. And that's what we need to see continue to happen. And a quick public service announcement for those who haven't seen the signage yet: Dufort Road will be closed again starting next week for about a month, because there's another culvert less than a quarter mile up the road from the one that washed out, a significant size culvert that is also in very poor condition and is about to be replaced, which is a good thing. But folks need to understand that we have to be patient, because infrastructure improvements are difficult, because it means that we have to be inconvenienced for a little while so that we can improve the safety for the future.
Not a rebuttal, but just a little comment. One of the recurring problems is, budget-wise, is the recruitment of equipment operators, truck drivers, road graders, operators, and so on. And evidently at one time, Jason was able to work with the high school, and even when people turned 18, they could hire summer help to learn them how to work on their CDL or work on operating heavy equipment. And so hoping that that can continue and return. And just the idea of recruitment and then keeping county employees, the whole idea of salaries mm-hmm. is a continuing challenge.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, here's a question that isn't something the commissioners can do something about directly, but it was the most asked question at the forum last night, and that is the where you stand on Proposition 1, which is the Open Primaries Initiative, which would it's a ballot measure that we're all going to be voting on, and it would open up primary elections in Idaho, as well as bring about ranked choice voting, or also called instant runoff voting. And Brian, why don't you go first on that one? Tell us where you stand for or against Proposition 1.
Well, I continue to be opposed to Proposition 1 because of the implementation of ranked choice voting and what that would mean to our county. If I was a county commissioner, then that would mean you have the obligation and responsibility to certify the election results for our county. And moving from our hand-counted, hand-audited, capable paper ballot system to one where, with this runoff election and four choices and how that algorithm works, moving over to computer software to tell us the result, I have grave concerns over the ability to audit and understand if we're getting accurate information. And so that's a no for me. I need to be sure that our integrity of our vote and our ability to clearly audit and understand the outcome is without question. Our current system of voting does that. If we change that, I do not have confidence that we will have that level of transparency any longer.
Steve Johnson, same question to you. Are you for or against Proposition 1, the Open Primaries Initiative?
Well, I strongly support Proposition 1 for a number of reasons. Probably the biggest one is, right now, we abandoned open primaries 12 years ago, when the one party closed their primary. So I believe we need to return to open primaries, how it was all the time I was growing up here. And as far as counting the votes, I have assurances and complete faith in our county clerk, Mr. Rosedale, that he will go to the ends of the earth working with the state to make sure there's no there's no possibility of fraud. And so I think the idea that, well, we can't go to this because something bad might happen, well, that's kind of been the roadblock to progress throughout history. We can't be concerned about supposed ugly things that might pop up, in my opinion. We need to make sure that it's actually on, you know, auditable and that it's accountable. But I have complete faith that the state, like other states, like Alaska and Maine and many other smaller places, cities and districts that have ranked choice voting, that we can make sure it's accurate and truthful.
I'd like to clarify, Clerk Rosedale has publicly stated his concern over the ability of the integrity of what's being proposed by Proposition 1. So while I agree and believe that Clerk Rosedale would do everything within his power to help maintain the integrity of the vote, this would be beyond his ability because he would be legally forced to conform to the outcome of Proposition 1 if it were to pass. So that's a nuance that's important to clarify, given what Clerk Rosedale has said publicly.
Yeah, I didn't mean to imply that he has endorsed it. Mm-hmm. I just feel like he has the ability and the track record that he will overcome any obstacles that might be presented.
Well, I'm going to ask a little follow-up on that one. And Brian, to you first on this. So let's say the integrity question, you know, the accuracy is satisfied. Do you think that the open primaries and the ranked choice voting would lead to better government?
You know, I don't. And the reason is, in life, it's critical that we always seek the best possible outcome, the best possible option. What I see ranked choice voting doing is saying, well, if we can't agree on the best, we'll take second, third, or fourth choice. I don't want the lower common denominator. I want the best. So I want to continue to pursue a process that forces everyone to seek the best, the top choice. In my mind, trying to settle for something less is never acceptable.
Mm-hmm. In my mind, respectfully disagreeing here, in my mind, the best is what's best for the majority of the people. So if only 30% of the people are electing a majority of state legislators and county commissioners, possibly, then that's not the best. In my opinion, it should be at least 50% plus. And I think one of the huge advantages of the open primaries and the ranked choice voting is you get more than one choice. You can take your top choice, and then you can also rank the others. And so your vote is going to continue on down the line until you arrive at a person who is, in my opinion, a consensus builder and somebody who can actually represent the majority of the citizens.
Okay. All right. Steve Johnson, thank you for that. And now we've got time for closing statements. Take a minute or two and give us your last words on, you know, what you'd like voters to know. Also, tell us how they can find out more about you if you have a website or a social page that they can go to. And Steve Johnson, you're first on this.
Well, thank you. And thank you for having us. And thank you, Brian, for being so civil and respectful. I appreciate that. But I do believe it's important to explain the significant differences between myself and my opponent. First and foremost, I'm a strong supporter of quality public education. I sincerely believe public education is a cornerstone of our democracy. I believe my opponent is not, doesn't have that same strong commitment to public education. Secondly, I'm a strong supporter of the sacred right to vote in every election. So I have already voted yes for Prop 1, the Open Primaries Initiative, and I believe my opponent has a different opinion. Number three, I'm a strong supporter of a woman's right to choose her own health care. I don't believe my opponent supports that same right. Number four, I'm a strong supporter of working closely with our state and federal governments, including shared funding, grants, and programs. And I believe my opponent is not of that same opinion. Number five, I strongly support individual freedom and responsibility, including the freedom to read what we want, the freedom to love who we want, and the freedom to pray how we want. And I don't believe my opponent feels the same way. And number six, I totally disagree with a thing called a loyalty oath that has been supported by the local leader, Scott Herndon of the Republican Central Committee, a big Boise lobby group called Idaho Freedom Foundation pushes this loyalty oath on on officials running and endorsed by the party. And I would like to know how Brian feels about that loyalty oath. And so the my pledge is that I would never sign a loyalty oath to a Boise lobby group, but I would certainly sign a loyalty oath to the citizens of Bonner County. Thank you very much.
And how can people find out more about you?
What's that? Do
you have a website you want to mention?
Website. SteveJohnsonForCommissioner.com. And thank you very much for your consideration. And looking forward to working for you, with you.
Okay, thank you, Steve Johnson. Brian Domke, give us your closing couple minutes here.
Well, Steve, I'll be happy to respond to your question. I have not been approached by the Idaho Freedom Foundation or any other group requesting that I make an oath of loyalty or any other oath. If I was approached, I would deny that. I am a very fiercely independent thinker. I am a Republican, and I'm not ashamed of that fact, but I also will and do represent the people, what's best for our county, and I don't believe in playing personality politics. So I think that from the primary up until this point, all of my actions have mirrored my words. And I'm also going to avoid the approach that you just took of suggesting what you do or don't believe. I'm going to focus on who I am and what I offer the citizens. And so I come with a background of experience, having worked as both a regional office manager and a project manager for large architecture and engineering firms, overseeing, planning, and being fiscally responsible for very large, complex projects with public taxpayer dollars. These projects, some of which have exceeded over $100 million for a single project, where I was the one who developed the budget and was accountable for the budget throughout the duration of the project. I have extensive experience working with community members in the development of projects to get their ideas brought forward to stakeholders. I have also had years of volunteering within our county government on the Planning and Zoning Subarea Committee and the Natural Resource Committee in order to help to keep our community safe, to protect our natural resources, and to come up with a thoughtful plan for the future for the growth of our county. Really, what I'd like to focus on is asking our constituents, the voters, to look at the qualifications, to look at the experience, and to look at the actions we've been taking throughout the course of this candidacy. I will continue to act with respect, and I will speak for myself and no one else. I am Brian Domke, running for Bonner County Commissioner District 1. You can get more information about me and my campaign at Domke4BonnerCounty.com. Thank you, Chris, for this opportunity.
Well, thank you both, Brian and Steve, for a great discussion today.